This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 144 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. We'll dig into this week's mailbag in just a second, but I wanted to send a reminder first that you guys should try out NumberFire Premium. I published my first round of tiers and rankings for premium members on Monday, but we've also got betting picks and advice for the World Cup, every PGA tournament, and day in and day out for Major League Baseball. Plus, we've already got our premium NFL draft kit ready to go if you're trying to get a head start with fantasy football. First-time users can use promo code CLUTCH at checkout and get your first month of premium for just $7.95. That's promo code CLUTCH. Visit numberfire.com/premium for more details. The first question in this week's mailbag says, "Hey JJ, I have a 10-team league that drafts in person every year because we're all good friends. We usually group up in alternating cities with different guys playing host. It's a fantastic weekend every year and we love it. Because it's an in-person draft, we typically have to draft earlier than we would like just due to schedules. Because of this, we have an interesting summer rule. We draft 18 rounds and then require a roster cut down to 16 the week before week 1, simulating the NFL roster cuts. Because of this, I haven't drafted a kicker or a defense in several years. That gives me two more spots to hold lottery ticket players during the summer. Then, before week 1, I just drop 4 guys and add a defense and a kicker and make a lineup, streaming those positions the rest of the year. All that run-up is to ask this. There are, on average, 16.5 quarterbacks drafted each year in the league. I'm more than okay with playing the 17th-ranked quarterback week 1. What do you think of not drafting a quarterback in this scenario? Waiting until the roster cutdowns to add the best available quarterback, presumably someone in the 17 to 20 range, and then streaming the rest of the year. Obviously, this could lead to some tricky weeks on the waiver wire since I'm juggling 3 positions, but at the same time, I think it would be rare to be swapping out all 3 in any given week. Typically, you can find at least a kicker to hold on to for a few weeks at a time, or a quarterback or defense with a favorable schedule run. I think in my scenario, it could be a potential edge, but perhaps there are pitfalls and I'm undervaluing or overlooking. Thanks, keep up the great work, Wes." I think this strategy is one that you can implement in any league that's drafting early. And in the leagues that force you to draft those positions, you can do so knowing that you're going to drop those players for dart throw players while the preseason is going on. So draft your quarterback, kicker, and defense, and if you're looking to stream those positions, you just drop them and pick up a running back and wide receiver for those roster spots leading up to week 1. Pick up those dart throws and hope that they hit in the preseason. This is all to say that yes, this is 100% viable. And you also make a great point in this email as well when you say that there will be stretches where you're not having to pick up a defense or a kicker or a quarterback during the season. Too often, people are turned off by streaming because they assume you're playing a completely different player in those 3 slots each week. That doesn't have to be the case, especially if you end up getting a player who's just a weekly plug-and-play guy. And that happens more often than most realize. This next question is from Twitter from @jmichaelffb. "At running back, regarding rookies, how important is where a team selected them in the draft for you? Many aren't sold on Ronald Jones, but the Bucs made him the 38th pick in the draft. Similarly, the Patriots uncharacteristically took Michelle in the first, but there's still lots of committee talks surrounding Patriot running backs." Yeah, I mean, I've talked about this topic on my podcast before, and I think that it's very important. You've got to follow team actions and see what they're doing in the draft and in free agency. So seeing where they pick players in the draft and how they spend money in free agency is a big deal. It at least can help show us what a team is trying to do at some level. And with draft picks, we know that players drafted earlier are going to get more immediate opportunity than those drafted late. But also, we can look at this from a scouting perspective too. Teams have scouting departments that are helping make decisions as to who's good and who isn't. As bad as teams are at drafting, we also know that players selected earlier in drafts are more talented than players selected later. So you're essentially looking at draft equity in 2 ways. One in the form of immediate playing time and volume, and the other just from a talent standpoint. And this is why draft equity is part of my prospect model. Now, of course, there will be instances where players bust or teams don't deploy their assets as much as we anticipated. You still have to take things on a case-by-case basis. Like, Ronald Jones was drafted ahead of Darius Geis, but that doesn't mean that he's going to automatically see more volume than Geis will here in year 1. It does tell me, though, that the Bucs like Jones and that they're going to utilize him in some way and that Jones may be pretty talented. But I think a lot of times when people ask questions like this, they're going at it from the wrong direction. I'm not saying that you're doing this here, Jeremy. I just think that a lot of times, fantasy owners want some sort of blanket way to analyze players when that just doesn't and can't exist. Looking at draft equity is just one of the many inputs that we should be analyzing when forecasting player production. It's important, it's something, but it's not everything. Like, imagine a world where you're going on a vacation and you're deciding what you're going to wear on that trip. How would you first decide what to wear? Maybe you'd look at the weather? That's probably what I would do. But you're not just going to stop there. You're going to think about any of the activities that you're going to do on the trip or whether or not you're going to go out to eat and so on. Draft equity is just one of those inputs that should go into your overall evaluation. It's one of the activities that you're going to do on your vacation. But to answer your question, yes, it's important because it can tell us something about both opportunity and talent. This next question is from Twitter from @PFButler12. Is there any correlation between teams' Vegas win totals and identifying running backs to target? I have a hard time thinking about drafting a running back from a team with a low win total assessment from Vegas. Therefore, I'm a little down on David Johnson, LeSean McCoy, and others. Love the pod. Yeah, so I think this falls in the same category of this obviously just being another input to a player's forecast. Like, think about it this way. Are all players on bad teams worthless in fantasy football? Of course not. But is there a connection between how good a team is and how strong their running backs will be? Yes. Good teams have positive game scripts and score more points. They'll see more volume in points. That's why so many good running backs come from good offenses. And that's why on the How to Spot a Breakout Running Back podcast a month or so ago, I talked about targeting players in good offenses and on good teams. But here's the other thing. Players in bad offenses should naturally not be projected to score as many fantasy points. For instance, I use a top-down approach when I'm building my projections where I'm looking at how a team is going to perform first and foremost. So if a team is going to perform poorly, that's inherently going to show in the projection for the players on that team. And if you're not making projections, and I know a lot of you aren't making projections, I do think you absolutely should strive to target players in good offenses across the board. And since looking at Vegas projected wins is a mechanism for predicting how good a team is going to be, then that's definitely a way to see if the team a player is on will be good or not. What sports books are putting out there can be utilized. There are plenty of other things that go into whether or not you should draft a player, of course, but how good his team is going to be is definitely one of those things. This next question says, hey JJ, I'm curious as to what you think about Spencer Ware for this season. He had over 1,300 total yards for KC in 2016. I don't doubt that Kareem Hunt is the clear top back on the team going into 2018, but does Ware have any value worthy of a late round selection? And do you think a Hunt and Ware combination could yield results similar to what New Orleans got from Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara last season? I'm really starting to think that Ware could be a huge steal as a late round dart throw. Thanks for the insight. It's always really appreciated. Jeff. Jeff, thank you for listening. So I think I should start things off here by saying that we should most definitely not expect any sort of Mark Ingram, Alvin Kamara performance from a team ever. What those two did last year was not something easily repeatable at all, not in any way. And the Chiefs are not built like the Saints are built. With that being said, my feelings about Ware are similar to how I feel about a lot of secondary backs on teams. He'll get some volume because that's how NFL teams roll these days. They split backfields up. But I do think right now that Ware does more harm to Kareem Hunt than he does good for himself. Meaning, I don't think Spencer Ware is going to have standalone predictable value in fantasy football today, right now. He only will if something were to happen to Kareem Hunt. And that's fine if there's upside in that form, but like I talked through in the Breakout Running Back podcast, I target backs in more ambiguous situations who don't need injuries to take the lead job. If the injury is an added bonus, that's perfect. That's great. Like, let's take Corey Clement as an example. I think he has some standalone PPR value in fantasy football this year, and he's in a great offense with a great offensive line. He can be a fill-in player if you're thin at running back. But there's also the upside that he sees more work than we anticipate since Jay Ajayi isn't as locked into his role as a lot of elite running backs are. And then we also have the Clement upside if something were to happen to Jay Ajayi, if there's an injury. For Ware, we kind of know Kareem Hunt is going to be extremely involved. It's not necessarily as up in the air as it is with Jay Ajayi. So I'm less inclined to take someone like Spencer Ware. I do think it's a little bit different, though, in a best ball league, because there are definitely scenarios where Spencer Ware could see spiked weeks even without a Kareem Hunt injury. The difference in a best ball league is you don't have to predict when those weeks are going to happen. And then on top of it all, he's got the upside if Kareem Hunt does go down. So that's how I generally handle the running back position. I'd go back and listen to the breakout running back pod, though, from last month, which is episode 135, if you want some more information on the types of running back that I like to target late. This next question is from @PDFresh53. Hey JJ, are pass attempts a stat that belong to the quarterback or the play caller? I'm curious because of all the discussion this offseason about Tyrod Taylor never attempting a lot of passes, but with the changing teams, can we still expect his normal number of attempts? Thanks. So I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Some play callers are pass heavier than others, that's definitely true, but that also depends on the type of personnel that team has. But what's just as important as all of this, if not more important, is game script. If a team is trailing all the time, it doesn't matter who's under center or what the play caller wants to do. They have to throw the ball. If they're trailing, they have to throw the rock. So like I said, there are a lot of factors at play. I don't think it's necessarily fair to just bring it all together and sort of categorize pass attempts by either quarterback and play caller, because there's a lot more that goes into an equation like that. But do I think that Tyrod Taylor will throw the ball more than he did in Buffalo? Yeah, I do. And I really hope that he does. This next question is from Twitter from @EggersK. What are the differences and similarities in draft strategy between the single starter positions, like quarterback and tight end? As tight ends are less predictable with less parity than quarterbacks, does it make more sense to take them comparatively earlier than quarterbacks? So first off, years ago on my other podcast, Living the Stream, my co-host Denny Carter and I dubbed these positions onesie positions. So if I refer to them as onesie positions, now you know what the hell that means. But yes, this is exactly right, or at least I think this is right. Quarterback is predictable each week in that we know there's a pool of 32 starters in the league and roughly 20 to 25 of them have a realistic shot at being a top five passer in that given week. We know what that overall pool of players looks like, so we're never shocked if someone like Andy Dalton ends up having a big week. He, like every other passer in the league, is going to throw the ball 30 plus times in a game. If he finishes as a QB1, nobody even blinks. Tight end isn't that predictable in that it's a lot harder to foresee a random tight end going off in a given week. The only reason we see random names at the top of the weekly scoring leaderboards at the position all the time is because the position is a dumpster fire. But someone like Travis Kelce or Rob Gronkowski will provide consistency at an inconsistent position. And that, I think, is the biggest reason that you should get them early. I'm not saying get them early, but that's one of the reasons that I think goes overlooked as to why you should get them early. It shouldn't be some value over replacement level formula that doesn't consider where replacement level tight ends are actually being drafted, or that you can stream the tight end position. You've got to think about opportunity cost, of course, but I'm much, much more okay with an early tight end pick than I am an early quarterback pick. This last question is from @FantasyChemist. What is your process for grouping guys in tiers? Do you have an objective or statistical approach versus subjectively grouping based on guys you like similarly? Yeah, so there are a few ways that you can go about it. The first is taking a list of projections and then grouping by that end total projection for each player. So if Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, Todd Gurley, and David Johnson are all within 10 points of one another from a projection standpoint, and there's a drop-off, let's say, to Alvin Kamara and Saquon Barkley, then those four running backs should be in their own tier. And you just go through that process over and over again. That's the totally objective way to do it. You can do that same exercise, but do it subjectively too. I think a lot of people do it that way. If you're tiering players and you're going through a list of rankings and you feel like there's a drop-off from one player to the next, then you just start a new tier. Because remember, tiers are just players that are interchangeable in rank. You may like one player in a tier more than another, but it shouldn't be by anything significant. The way I like to tier players, though, is also by how they accumulate points. So if there are third down backs who are going later in drafts, maybe like Tariq Cohen and Chris Thompson, I'll tier those guys together. Or if projections are close between a group of, say, 16 guys, but half of those players have higher ceilings and the other half have just high floors, I may split those up as well. Hopefully that at least helps you a little bit. But that's it for today's show. Thanks again for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And when you're on iTunes, guys, please do me a solid and leave a rating and review. It really goes a long way. I'm also on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. I appreciate you. Enjoy your weekend.